looking prettier than ever in her earnestness. "He knows you have got rich relations, child. That's the secret of his liking, I suspect."
"Aunt March, how dare you say such a thing? John is above such meanness. And I won't listen to you a minute if you talk so," cried Meg indignantly, forgetting everything but the injustice of the old lady's suspicions. "My John wouldn't marry for money any more than I would. We are willing to work, and we mean to wait. I'm not afraid of being poor, for I've been happy so far, and I know I shall be with him because he loves me, and I—" Meg stopped there, remembering all of a sudden that she hadn't made up her mind, that she had told her John to go away, and that he might be overhearing her inconsistent remarks. Aunt March was very angry, for she had set her heart on having her pretty niece make a fine match, and something in the girl's happy young face made the lonely old woman feel both sad and sour.
"Well, I wash my hands of the whole affair. You are a willful child, and you've lost more than you know by this piece of folly. No, I won't stop. I'm disappointed in you, and haven't spirits to see your father now. Don't expect anything from me when you're married. Your Mr. Book's friends must take care of you. I'm done with you forever."
And slamming the door in Meg's face, Aunt March drove off in high dudgeon. She seemed to take all the girl's courage with her, for when left alone, Meg stood a moment, undecided whether to laugh or cry. Before she could make up her mind, she was taken possession of by Mr. Brooke, who said all in one breath, "I couldn't help hearing, Meg. Thank you for defending me, and Aunt March for proving that you do care for me a little bit."
"I didn't know how much till she abused you," began Meg. "And I needn't go away, but may stay and be happy, may I, dear?"
Here was another fine chance to make the crushing speech and the stately exit. But Meg never thought of doing either, and disgraced herself forever in Joe's eyes by meekly whispering, "Yes, John," and hiding her face on Mr. Brooke's waistcoat. 15 minutes after Aunt March's departure, Joe came softly downstairs, paused an instant at the parlour door, and hearing no sound within, nodded and smiled with a satisfied expression, saying to herself, "She has seen him away as we planned, and that affair is settled. I'll go and hear the fun, and have a good laugh over it." But poor Joe never got her laugh, for she was transfixed upon the threshold by a spectacle which held her there, staring with her mouth nearly as wide open as her eyes. Going in to exult over a fallen enemy, and to praise a strong-minded sister for the banishment of an objectionable lover, it certainly was a shock to behold the aforesaid enemy serenely sitting on the sofa with the strong-minded sister enthroned upon his knee and wearing an expression of the most abject submission. Joe gave a sort of gasp, as if a cold shower-bath had suddenly fallen upon her, for such an unexpected turning of the tables actually took her breath away. At the odd sound, the lovers turned and saw her. Meg jumped up, looking both proud and shy. But that man, as Joe called him, actually laughed and said coolly, as he kissed the astonished newcomer, "Sister Joe, congratulate us." That was adding insult to injury. It was altogether too much. And making some wild demonstration with her hands, Joe vanished without a word. Rushing upstairs, she startled the invalids by exclaiming tragically as she burst into the room, "Oh, do somebody go down quick! John Brooke is acting dreadfully, and Meg likes it!" Mr. and Mrs. March left the room with speed, and casting herself upon the bed, Joe cried and scolded tempestuously as she told the awful news to Beth and Amy. The little girls, however, considered it a most agreeable and interesting event, and Joe got little comfort from them. So she went up to her refuge in the garret, and confided her troubles to the rats. Nobody ever knew what went on in the parlour that afternoon, but a great deal of talking was done, and quiet Mr. Brooke astonished his friends by the eloquence and spirit with which he pleaded his suit, told his plans, and persuaded them to arrange everything just as he wanted it. The tea bell rang before he had finished describing the paradise which he meant to earn for Meg, and he proudly took her into supper, both looking so happy that Joe hadn't the heart to be jealous or dismal. Amy was very much impressed by John's devotion and Meg's dignity. Beth beamed at them from a distance, while Mr. and Mrs. March surveyed the young couple with such tender satisfaction that it was perfectly evident Aunt March was right in calling them as unworldly as a pair of babies. No one ate much, but everyone looked very happy, and the old room seemed to brighten up amazingly when the first romance of the family began there. "You can't say nothing pleasant ever happens now, can you, Meg?" said Amy, trying to decide how she would group the lovers in the sketch she was planning to make. "No, I'm sure I can't. How much has happened since I said that? It seems a year ago," answered Meg, who was in a blissful dream, lifted far above such common things as bread and butter. "The joys come close upon the sorrows this time, and I rather think the changes have begun," said Mrs. March. "In most families there comes now and then a year full of events. This has been such a one, but it ends well after all." "Hope the next will end better," muttered Joe, who found it very hard to see Meg absorbed in a stranger before her face, for Joe loved a few persons very dearly and dreaded to have their affection lost or lessened in any way. "I hope the third year from this will end better. I mean it shall if I live to work out my plans," said Mr. Brooke, smiling at Meg, as if everything had become possible to him now. "Doesn't it seem very long to wait?" asked Amy, who was in a hurry for the wedding. "I've got so much to learn before I shall be ready. It seems a short time to me," answered Meg, with a sweet gravity in her face never seen there before. "You have only to wait. I am to do the work," said John, beginning his labours by picking up Meg's napkin, with an expression which caused Jo to shake her head and then say to herself with an air of relief as the front door banged, "Here comes Laurie. Now we shall have a little sensible conversation." But Jo was mistaken, for Laurie came prancing in, overflowing with spirits, bearing a great bridal-looking bouquet for Mrs. John Brooke, and evidently labouring under the delusion that the whole affair had been brought about by his excellent management. "I knew Brooke would have it all his own way. He always does. For when he makes up his mind to accomplish anything, it's done though the sky falls," said Laurie, when he had presented his offering and his congratulations. "Much obliged for that recommendation. I take it as a good omen for the future, and invite you to my wedding on the spot," answered Mr. Brooke, who felt at peace with all mankind, even his mischievous pupil. "I'll come if I'm at the ends of the earth, for the sight of Joe's face alone on that occasion would be worth a long journey." "You don't look festive, ma'am. What's the matter?" asked Laurie, following her into a corner of the parlour, whither all had adjourned to greet Mr. Lawrence. "I don't approve of the match, but I've made up my mind to bear it, and shall not say a word against it," said Joe solemnly. "You can't know how hard it is for me to give up Meg," she continued, with a little quiver in her voice. "You don't give her up. You only go halves," said Laurie consolingly. "It never can be the same again. I've lost my dearest friend," sighed Joe. "You've got me, anyhow. I'm not good for much, I know. But I'll stand by you, Joe, all the days of my life. Upon my word, I will." And Laurie meant what he said. "I know you will. And I'm very much obliged." "You are always a great comfort to me, Teddy," returned Joe, gratefully shaking hands. "Well, now, don't be dismal. There's a good fellow. It's all right, you see. Meg is happy. Brooke will fly round and get settled immediately. Grandpa will attend to him. And it will be very jolly to see Meg in her own little house. We'll have capital times after she is gone, for I shall be through college before long. And then we'll go abroad on some nice trip or other. Wouldn't that console you?" "I rather think it would. But there's no knowing what may happen in 3 years," said Joe thoughtfully. "That's true. Don't you wish you could take a look forward and see where we shall all be then? I do.